Father in heaven, thank you for this opportunity again to gather here together and look into your word and study, and especially on the topic of music. I pray that you continue to open our eyes to your truths and that you would help us to have right discernment in this area of our lives. Bless these young people. And I pray that you would give each of them a healthy musical experience in their lives. Pray this all in Jesus' name. Amen. You may be seated. I thought I would start out today with just a little bit more of some of my personal experience in music. I told you I had a good foundation in music. We sang a lot at home. And one thing that happened when I was 16 and I started to work away, got a job in a lawnmower shop repairing lawnmowers, and I worked there for 3.5 years, and in the shop where I worked, they played music. I wasn't aware of that right when I started, but here that turned out to be the case, that most days there was music playing, and it started out with mostly gospel, and then there were some other workers that started there that preferred other kinds of music, and it kind of went from gospel to more of a country gospel to all-out country hits eventually. And it was something I had talked with management about numerous times, and they tried to oblige me without making anybody else too upset, which must have been a real challenge for them because it seemed like it never quite happened. So for about 3.5 years, there was even times where I began to kind of like what I was hearing, even the country. And I remember going out to my car and getting my few CDs I had and putting a CD in of hymns or whatever it was that I had, choral music, and driving home and turning the volume up and singing my heart out to try to somehow cleanse my mind of what I was hearing during the day. I don't recommend that for young people, but that was an experience I had. Then, also during that time, I was very interested in singing, sang a lot, sang all I could, and I had an opportunity to sing in numerous choirs, and music camp started down in Shenandoah. I think some of you are aware that started, I think, in 2006, I believe, was their first year, and I was there. And I was there 4 years, 2 years following that, and then I think I missed a year and then had another year that I was there. And in that time, thoroughly enjoyed that, but something that was happening at music camp that was also happening other places, and it still is happening, at that time I really enjoyed it, but that was, we would sing spirituals. Now, I still enjoy some of the spirituals, and there's even some in the hymns of the church that are, you know, fitting to use at times. But the kind of arrangements that I was enjoying singing was, well, it kind of was a bit of a compromise to some of what I've been teaching you. And I kind of began to realize that because I was promoting music, good music, in my home church. And yet I liked these spirituals, and it was kind of, I felt like there was just a little bit of a paradox. Well, that I had to work on that. We started choir, and I, at that point, still had it in my mind that a good choral program should have at least one spiritual and one gospel song. I didn't really like gospel songs, but I thought there should be one in there, and it should maybe be hyped up just a little bit, or arranged or something. And so we kind of did that at first, and I don't think the gospel songs were an issue with anybody, but the spirituals were, and Brother Leonard at our congregation over the years helped me a lot and gave me a lot of Aaron sharpenings Aaron, and I eventually came to the place that, you know what, it doesn't make sense for me to insist on this. I'm going to lay that down. The amazing thing was that I almost lost my taste for that entirely. And so I just give that for whatever it's worth. I will say that I appreciate 90. I don't know what to say. Probably 95% of what goes on at Shenandoah Music Camp. I don't know if any of you have been there or not, but I appreciate much of it. But there's just some things like that were a bit of a challenge in my life. And so I just share that to show that I've had to walk some of these roads too. And I realize that maybe some of you have come from a place musically or have been into music that was far worse, and the challenges are greater. I realize that, but I just share it to help you understand that those challenges are there. And I still face some things that are a little perplexing at times as to what to do with. But for the most part, I feel like music is actually a very clear issue to me, and that's what I'm trying to share here today. And today specifically, up until now, I've probably been creating more questions than answers. I don't know. I hope that changes today. I'm sure there's going to be more questions created, and I'm hoping that I will actually get done soon enough that we can maybe ask some of those questions and try to answer them. So if you have questions till the end of the session, I may just have time to let you ask that question if you dare to do so here. Probably the reason you stayed standing was to do your memory verse. You may stand, and let's say that. Psalm 89, verse 15, it says, "Blessed is the people that know the joyful sound. They shall walk, O Lord, in the light of thy countenance." Thank you. That was much better than yesterday. You may be seated. You can turn your Bibles to Ephesians chapter 5. We started on Wednesday in Ephesians chapter 4. Now we're in Ephesians chapter 5. It seems like the things that Paul has to say here in Ephesians are especially pertinent to this issue of music. And interestingly enough, in chapter 5, music comes up. Ephesians chapter 5, we'll start reading at verse 1. "Be ye therefore followers of God as dear children, and walk in love as Christ also hath loved us, and hath given himself for us an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling savor. But fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not be once named among you as becometh saints, neither filthiness nor foolish talking nor jesting, which are not convenient, but rather giving of thanks. For this ye know, that no whoremonger, nor unclean person, nor covetous man who is an idolater hath any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. Let no man deceive you with vain words, for because of these things cometh the wrath of God upon the children of disobedience. Be not ye therefore partakers with them, for ye were sometimes darkness, but now are ye light in the Lord. walk as children of light. For the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness and righteousness and truth, proving what is acceptable unto the Lord. And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. For it is a shame even to speak of those things which are done of them in secret. But all things that are reproved are made manifest by the light, for whatsoever doth make manifest is light. Wherefore he saith, Awake thou that sleepest, and arise from the dead, and Christ shall give thee light. See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Wherefore be ye not unwise, but understanding what the will of the Lord is. And be not drunk with wine wherein is excess, but be filled with the Spirit, speaking to yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord. Well, there's a couple of verses there. There's a lot of things that would be worth talking about and would certainly apply to music. But we're not going to touch on all of them. But in verse 10, proving what is acceptable unto the Lord. That's what we want to do here this week with music, is showing and trying music and showing what is acceptable. And in verse 15, see then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise. We talked about the first day, Wednesday, about what music does to the mind and the power that rhythms and even melodies can have on your thinking and the mind. I am not sure what causes that popping noise. Anyway, so the mind, we were talking about the mind there, and it's very important that we understand that, yes, music does have an effect, and when it's having that effect, I'm not going to be aware of it. Okay? So it's important that we're wise and we make right choices in music. And then verse 19, speaking to yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord. This verse gets used wrongly all the time. It seems like there's some that say or would say it psalms and hymns and whatever other song we like. A spiritual song is something that has Christian words, but is that what it means? Well, let's think about what they mean. Psalms is exactly what it means. The Psalms. And it's wonderful that we have at least a few Psalms that to music here and there that we can actually sing those. Hymns, we know what those are. It's exactly what it means. And spiritual songs, if you look up the word spiritual in Strong's Concordance, which I know that's just the basics as far as studying, you know, what's Greek. The first thing Strong says is not carnal. That's the first definition or word there, not carnal. So psalms and hymns and non-carnal songs, okay? So, you know, regardless of what, if the words are Christian words or about Jesus or God or whatever, the music itself, if it's carnal, does not fit this the definition of a spiritual song. But by the way, that is three kinds of music. Okay? A spiritual song is not a hymn. And I would say we've been maybe even singing quite a few spiritual songs, because this hymn book doesn't really have a lot of what I consider hymns. They're more gospel hymns. I don't know if we would put that under the spiritual song category or keep it in the hymn category, but I'm just mentioning it. I'll explain that a little more later. So, yesterday we talked about how at Congo Square, voodoo music was happening and how those rhythms and that music eventually got mixed into European classical traditional music. Now, that's how pop came about. Popular music is that mixture. And so we have to keep in mind that almost all popular music has, well, now anymore, it's actually getting pretty bad. It's getting to the point where there's not much resemblance. But a lot of popular music, most of what used would be, what you might be tempted with has in it classical sounds and things that belong to traditional music. And so you might pick up on those things and feel like, well, this has some things. I mean, they use a lot of the same instruments. Not in the same proportions, but it's that mixing. And we have to learn to recognize those elements that are in popular music that are not so much in classical. Now, I realize that as time goes on, classical musicians and singers are, you know, they just dabbling around in a lot of things and create a lot of interesting mixtures that are kind of like a classical version of this or that, and that's unfortunate. So we have to be aware of that. But the point I'm making is that traditional classical sound, it is worth your time to develop a taste for it. And hopefully tomorrow we can give you some points of how you can do that. All right, today we want to talk about gospel and contemporary Christian contemporary music, or CCM. Now, yesterday I said, what about Christian music? And then I realized later that maybe some thought that I was going to switch gears today and talk about good music. Not quite yet. We want to make a little bit more practical what we've been talking about. I have just a little bit more history to give you. If we go back to the 1800s, where we started yesterday, prior to pop music developing, the slaves in this country, and by the way, it's just a terrible thing. If you study what happened with the slaves, the way they were treated, the way Christians, professing Christians, how they dealt with slaves, it's just a terrible thing. But if we were to assume that Congo Square was the only place this mixture was happening, we would be incorrect. Of course, there was little pockets here and there that might have been. That was a major place. But there was also some other things happening that had significant impact, where African music combined with traditional music. In the early 1800s, we had revivals, especially in the southern states, called camp meetings. And some of you are probably familiar with, some camp meetings are still done today. But a revival-type meeting where the country folk, typically, that was somewhere in a more rural area, and folks would come together, camp out for however long, and listen to preaching. Very energetic, very spirited revival. The blacks loved the camp meetings, from what we read. And they flocked to the camp meetings. And apparently, as time went on, we were getting closer to the Civil War and all the dispute about, you know, slaves and they really should have their freedom and all the pressures from the North on the South and all those things. And it seems like slaves must have got, or at least some of them, had the freedom to go to the camp meetings. And of course, there would have been free blacks at the camp meetings. And they could be there, they had to be segregated, or they were given a spot they could set up, and they could have their service while the whites had their service. And as I understand it, there were times in some of those camp meetings where the whites' service got completely drowned out by the spirited singing and clapping and dancing and whatever else that was going on among the blacks. They were all there together in the same near premise. Well, whites, there was definitely some that took note and maybe even participated in what was going on there with the slaves. And I think the song leaders at the camp meetings especially must have taken note because they had an interesting challenge. You know, before there was singing schools, there was hymn singing, there was kind of like your folk hymns that would be sung. But these song leaders had to figure out how to take a large crowd of people at a camp meeting and sing songs, and they didn't have song books, and there, of course, they didn't all know the same songs, so what do you do? So they had to make up songs. Well, the blacks, they were good at that, and they had their spirituals developed here in the United States or in the Americas when they got converted, which, by the way, many blacks got converted, especially at the camp meetings. And so these song leaders must have picked up on some of the how to take a phrase or a piece of scripture or whatever like the blacks did and make a song out of it and repeat it and add in a hallelujah at the end of lines, you know, and repeat the same things over so that you could kind of sing it and repeat it with the large congregation that was there and get everybody singing together. You know, that was the beginning of, or what eventually became, gospel hymns. I think a lot of those camp meeting songs have largely gone away. You might be able to find a book somewhere that would have some camp meeting songs in. But the later half of the century, you know, 1850 and on, we had other revival meetings and tent meetings like D.L. Moody, evangelist, speaker, traveling around the country, and he had a singer with him, Ara Sankey. I suppose you're familiar with that name. Shows up in our hymn books quite a bit. Ara Sankey was one. There was Philip P. Bliss, William Howard Doane, if you look at a lot of Fanny Crosby songs, he's composed most of the music for those. The style of music they composed for those songs, it was not like the old traditional hymns. It's a little different. A little bit more spontaneous. They usually did it fairly quickly, sometimes even on the go in a meeting. They usually have a chorus that we repeat after every verse. And just the music structure is more basic, straightforward. Bass, you might sing do, 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 so, fa, you know. and not have to do a lot of jumping around. Keep it simple. For a congregation to get everybody singing at large services. That's the beginning of gospel music. The Nation newspaper in March 1876 said this about Sankey's hymns. While written to religious words, they are made attractive by secular contrivances, a circus quick step, a Negro sentimental ballad, a college chorus, and a hymn all in one. Now, we sing a lot of Sankey's hymns. But here's a newspaper article that's saying, this is the snazziest stuff we got yet. I point that out for two reasons. Number one, I think it's healthy to recognize that while they're still very traditional, and we have them in our hymn books, the gospel hymns, the ones with the refrains and all that, do not carry quite the quality as the more classic hymns do. Okay? It's just helpful to know that. Unfortunately, with the book you're having to use this week, you're not given a lot of option. The other reason I pointed out is to show you just how traditional America's music still was. Yes, it wasn't on the quality of European, because it wasn't Europe. But the hymns, the folk songs, all the music that was here prior to 1900 must have been of a pretty good quality for a newspaper article to say that Ara Sankey's hymns were, it was the poppiest sound of the time. Okay? Just to take your minds back to yesterday a bit. Let's just look at a gospel song real quick here in our hymnal, 577 in the black book. This isn't one of Sankey's songs, but it's a gospel hymn that would be of this sort. Sorry, I'm fumbling here. All right, I'd just like to sing this. We'll just sing one verse of it. Oh, when the trumpet... breaks eternal bright and fair, when the saints... over on the other shore, and the roll is caught up yonder, I'll be there. When the roll is caught up yonder, 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 I'll be there. Now, did you ever notice that you're not actually singing that timing correctly? If you were to sing that timing with dotted eighths and 16th notes, you would have to sing, when the trumpet of the Lord shall sound and time shall be no more, okay? Much quicker on those 16th notes. Now, I don't think the composer actually intended for you to sing it that way. Because what you did was putting a triplet, if we divided each quarter note of this song into three beats, okay, we're singing it 4/4 time, we divide in three beats, knock out the first two, we get da 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 da. And we're in 4/4 time but we have a triple feel. We're singing in a duple meter, but we're giving it a triplet feel. Guess what? That is exactly, no, not exactly, but pretty close to what, when I talked about swing rhythm yesterday, that's what they're talking about. Da 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 da. Now, if there was a jazzer here today, he would be sure to let us know, I think, that we ain't swinging. Because they're pretty protective of their art. It's got to be felt, and I'm sure we don't have that experience. But I just point that out, that this is some of the early gospel history. So, around the time of the Civil War, there was many black Methodist and Baptist churches that started. Many of them. Blacks were converted at the camp meetings and so forth. Many of those churches said, we're serious. No drums, no percussion. We're going to sing traditional songs from Europe. Black people deciding that in their brotherhood that we're not doing that. Praise the Lord. But not all did. And some continued to use their African rhythms and dance in their worship. And guess what? Worshippers still got possessed in church, just like they did in the voodoo ceremonies. But it was called being possessed with the Holy Ghost. And that's what led to what became the holiness movement, eventually the Pentecostal movement. I realized that the black churches weren't the whole source of all that, if you study the history, but it definitely had a big part of it. So, things like slain in the spirit, speaking in tongues, healing, the spiritual gifts, those things came out of the use of this kind of music that the blacks were doing in church. They called it rocking the church. When they would have what they called a shout, which was basically a big dance right after the preaching would happen, because the preacher would be half singing, half preaching lines. You might have seen a black preacher do that, not just black preachers, white preachers started to do this in the gospel realm. And preaching and the congregation's responding and back and forth, and it kind of goes and goes until finally a song, maybe it's known, maybe it's not really known, kind of emerges out of it, and there's kind of a big just kind of party that happens, and then they're dismissed. The blacks called that a shout. Anyway, moving on. Alfred Metrux, I'm not sure if I say his name right, writing about voodoo, said, "A Pentecostal preacher describing his feelings when the Spirit was upon him listed to me the exact same symptoms as those which I heard from the mouths of people who had been possessed by the Lao. Undeniably, the ecstasy which breaks out during the ceremonies of certain Protestant sects in the south of the United States reflects a survival, if not the rites, then at least of the religious behavior." He's just a writer writing about American culture, and he's saying what he sees in Pentecostalism and in voodoo, he sees the connection. All right, moving on. Gospel music. There was a man by the name of Thomas Dorsey. He was born in 1899, beginning of the 20th century, and he lived to 1993. He was a blues musician, but he experienced some kind of spiritual quickening and revival or something in his life after a bit of a depression. And in 1928, he decided he doesn't want to do the blues. He wants to write religious music. Only problem was, he didn't change his style. He still composed church hymns or songs in the blues style. And guess what? He couldn't sell his music. He would go to the black churches, and the pastor would say, "Nope, not here." And so he wasn't making any money like he had been on blues, so he was forced at times to keep doing his blues. Okay, so even though he didn't like it, he would still perform in the kind of the nightclub area of town in those days, but then he'd still be trying to peddle hymns to the churches. Well, eventually, after he kept it up long enough, there was a gospel singer here or there that made one of his songs popular. And before long, he was able to get in with a church and become full-time in gospel music. And today, Thomas A. Dorsey is known as the father of gospel music. You probably know one of his most famous songs. "Take My Hand, Precious Lord." Does anybody know that song? "Take my hand." How does it go? "Precious Lord, take my hand. Lead me on, help me stand." Now, I have to admit, I kind of like that song. I grew up singing that song with my family. I have some good memories around that song. But truth be told, the style of that song is very bluesy. Very bluesy. The way the harmony structure works and everything. I told you yesterday that the blues was considered the devil's music in those days. That's why the black preachers didn't want anything to do with it at first. Well, nonetheless, it came in full sail into gospel music. Now, I'm not saying we have to stop singing that song. Just don't sing it the way Thomas A. Dorsey or Mahalia Jackson or any of those old gospel singers sang it, okay? Well, that was what's considered gospel or black gospel. White gospel, or southern gospel, as we know it, was also becoming a thing. And the two kind of interweaved. And by the way, when we say gospel music, that's kind of ambiguous. It's just music with the gospel message. Gospel music now mostly is about singing. Whereas the popular genres we talked about yesterday, a lot about instrumental music. Certainly had instrumental music in gospel, a lot about singing. Makes sense, because it's supposed to be about the gospel message. Well, gospel music became a major contributor to popular music. It's been said that jazz gave rock and roll its best musicians, and gospel gave rock and roll its best singers. There's a whole list of them. I don't know their names. I know Elvis Presley is one that sang gospel. It's sad. The church sold out to popular music, even in the gospel era, in the beginning 1900s, first half of the century. Well, then the rock and roll era comes. We have the rebellion in the 60s, youth culture, Satanism is popping up all over the place, drugs is becoming a huge problem. The hippie movement comes on. And I should probably just let somebody older here tell us what that was. I'm not old enough to know, but it was these city young people, long hair, big flowered shirts, had that attitude of counterculture about them. But in the 60s, it was supposed to be about love, okay? It was about love for everyone, which was meaning don't try to tell anybody what to do, was love, I guess. Well, there then came a movement after the rebellion. These people were looking for something, I guess, and there was this, I hate to use the word revival for it, because it wasn't. It was known as the Jesus movement, once again coming out of the charismatic movement, where these young people got excited about Jesus. They were called Jesus freaks. Many street musicians got, quote, born again. But once again, their music didn't change. The words changed, but the music didn't change. That is the beginning of Christian Contemporary Music, or CCM. Once again, that term doesn't really mean a particular genre. It's just simply Christian words put to popular music of our time. That's all it means. So, with that bit of history, let's just revisit and remember the two problems with popular music. Number one is inversion of the proper music structure using polyrhythms. I think we've made that clear. Number two is central instrumental and vocal techniques. Pitch bending, sliding, scooping, flipping the voice, whispery, breathy, and airy voice. Now, we could have done a progression today of gospel music and show you how it got heavier and heavier with popular music and how gospel and popular music shared that. But I didn't think it would be worth our time. I decided, let's just jump right in where we are. Well, no, there's a lot worse things, but where we are as a people today, and some of the things we deal with. And let's think about these vocal and instrumental techniques. Remember, I said gospel, CCM, it's more about singing now. Okay? So now these techniques are largely a vocal issue. Yesterday, we talked a lot about the bending guitar strings, the scarce guitar slide, all those things. But now this becomes a vocal issue in gospel and CCM. Now, I want to make it clear, because all these people are supposedly Christians, I am not judging their sincerity, okay? I could very well, I suppose it's very well possible that I'll play some music today where there's a genuinely sincere Christian playing or singing. I'm not judging his sincerity, but I am judging his music. I think there's a lot of ignorance out there. I think there's a lot of people that just don't know the things that I'm showing you here this week. All right. Let's start out with just a bit of more of a gospel sound. These are whites, but they've learned this kind of male quartet sound from the blacks.
His love is like a river, running in a rolling tide.
you think? Is that all right music? Based on what I've told you here this week? It'll get you moving? Yeah. What's wrong with it? Do we got the polyrhythms there? Yep. Well, what about the... Oh, they wouldn't have performed it in a nightclub, brother. I agree with you. It would sound that way. What about the voice? Sliding? Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, like I said before, it's not wrong to slur one. Not that yelling like that. Okay. But, you know, once in a while to have a slur in music is okay if it's where it's supposed to be. Okay? Or if there's a soloist that slides a note to put some feeling there, here and there, but not this constant scooping, sliding, just as the way our style works, okay? That's not acceptable. So, all right, if that's not okay to listen to, then well, maybe let's try this.
Step into the water, went out a little bit deeper, wet your feet in the water of His love. Oh, step into the water, went out a little bit deeper.
Now, maybe I'm showing my age a little bit because I know this music probably is not real common. Maybe I'm talking more to the dads right now. So, is that all right? Step into the water. Wade out a little bit deeper. I feel like I'm stepping in the water right now. What do you think? Do we have any of the elements there? Did you hear the piano playing? It had some syncopated rhythms going. Well, let's move it ahead just a little bit. You know, it's interesting, gospel CCM, we like to ramp it up slow. Now, don't get me wrong. I'd like to have a bass voice like that. But really, really, I wouldn't use it that way. What are they doing with the voices? Are they doing some of the things we were talking about this week? What do you think? Some sheepish, yeah? All right. How about this? Here, my point is this. If it's okay to listen to the one I just played, Step Into the Water, like that, if it's okay to listen to that, why wouldn't you listen to the one before that? Now, I realize it's heavier, but what are your children someday? When your fathers, if you're listening to Step Into the Water by the Cathedrals, what's going to keep your son from saying that we can listen to the Gaither vocal band singing the other song we played? What about this sound? All right, you got the idea. Is it there? What'd you hear, polyrhythms? What was there? Huh? Oof. Yeah, yeah. And then the solo voice. Is he singing straight, clean tones? No. You're going to have to talk a little louder. Yeah, yeah. You know, my sense in those three clips I just played is they're all pretty similar, actually. That gospel sound. All right. Take your Bibles real quick and turn to Isaiah 23, verse 15. I'll just show you this short little verse here. Because it pertains to something I want to talk about next. We have a metaphor in this verse. The metaphor is describing a city, Tyre. Isaiah 23, verse 15, it says, "And it shall come to pass in that day that Tyre shall be forgotten 70 years, according to the days of one king. After the end of 70 years shall Tyre sing as an harlot." Now, I know that the harlot and the singing is the metaphor that's being used, but a metaphor is useless if there's not a reality to that. In other words, there must be something that, there must be a certain way a harlot sings, right? So how does a harlot sing? I think it's worth some thought. What's the difference between a harlot singing and a godly woman singing? Our zones of interaction. I'll just talk real quick here. We have, or somebody came up with this idea. If you want to come up with different ones, that's fine, but we have three zones of interaction. If you're beyond arm's length from where I am and we're talking, that's a social zone of interaction. It's comfortable, right? If you're within an arm's length of me, you're in here, it's getting pretty personal, okay? It's a little bit more personal. If you get within 2 inches and touching, that's intimate. Why do I bring this up? Because in popular music, not the gospel I was just playing as much, well, they do it too in a way, but in pop music, In CCM music, this happens all the time, that we invade that personal, private, intimate space. How do we do that? And this is where I'll use this. I talked about inventions. I said that by 1930s, we had microphones and amplifiers and everything. The gospel music era, the CCM era, has made tremendous use. This is their number one instrument. They wouldn't say that, but it is. How does it get used? We can invade your intimate space by using a microphone like this. Hi, how are you? And we can whisper right into your ear. Do you know what I'm talking about? Have you heard it? Sure. If I use this microphone like that and say, I can say things to you women in a way that would be totally inappropriate from here using the microphone, okay? Because I can whisper right into your ear. Inventions are powerful. And it was something I wanted to make more of a point of this week, and I kind of missed it, where I had some of my notes. But inventions, when inventions happen, they change the way things get done, how things work. And it is what it is in the world. And we have to deal with it. Sounds through the microphone that you really should only hear after you're married. And it happens all the time. You just have to walk through a store to hear somebody speaking right into your ear. And may I suggest to you today that this is one of the things you can look at to to try to discern, is the music I'm analyzing right now more of a classical or pop? Because classically performing classical music, in general, there might be exceptions, they prefer a natural sound. So if they're using mics, they want them far away, at least an arm's length or farther, and preferably not at all. Now, if you observe someone singing right at a mic, that doesn't mean automatically that it's not classical singing, because unfortunately we build our buildings nowadays so that we have to use mics. Why do we do that? Well, because we do all kinds of percussive music, and if we had an acoustic building, it would get all confused and it wouldn't sound right. So we have to dampen everything up, and so now when we speak and we sing, we have to use mics to be heard, and that the classical musicians, choirs, have to deal with that. So we use microphones. But that's not the ideal. In the classic mind, the ideal is to have no amplification at all, natural sound. And the studio technician will tell you that the way, you know, if a singer comes, you find out what kind of a sound does he want. Does he want, a natural sound? If so, we keep the microphone back here. He wants a personal, close sound, we'll move it closer. If he wants to have an intimate sound that's not appropriate, we're going to put the microphone right there. You can learn to listen for it. And by the way, the YouTube videos, you can't trust that, whether you're using microphones or not, because nowadays we go into the recording studio and we record the song right into the microphone doing all kinds of stuff, and then we go out and walk through the woods and take the video shot. Okay? And there's no microphone seen anywhere. And you wonder, well, where's the noise of all this wind that's blowing the clothing and everything? It's crazy. What's happening? The entertainment we do. Music for Pleasure by Simon Frith. I need to keep moving. All pop singers, male and female, have to express direct emotion. The voice is an apparently transparent reflection of feeling. It is the sound of the voice, not the words sung, which suggest what a singer really means. You catch what he said? So it's not what they're saying. It's the sound of their voice. That's what they really mean. All right. What of it? Good music? What do we have? Did we have? Remember, we're talking about a voice that is whispery, breathy, airy voice. We're flipping or scooping. Did we have any of that? Had that breathy voice close to the mic? Your mouth has to be right on the mic to do that. That couldn't be heard if that woman did not have a mic. How about this? This woman has a beautiful voice. It's just sad that she doesn't use it correctly. She's not so much breathy, but she does some other things.
Changes what you see.
course, the rhythm was coming now, you know that. But even if she sang the whole song that way, without any drums, maybe no instruments at all, is that okay? No. I don't see how it can be based on the things that I shared yesterday. Because if the instrument shouldn't be slipping, and by the way, who copied who? Are the instruments copying the voice, or is the voice copying the instruments? It's actually happening both ways. It's like this competition between gospel music singing and instrumental jazz style, you know, continually trying to see how we can lick it up a little better. Beautiful piano playing. Would her voice sound like that if she did not have a mic? Of course she has to have a mic to record. But does she get up, would that woman get on stage and be able to sing like that without a mic for us here today? It wouldn't have that effect. But at the concert, it's even way more ramped up than that. Might feel like I'm beating a dead horse, just giving you clip after clip. But I'm just playing you the music that I hear talked about in our churches. I'm not upset about it, but it does grieve me. How about this? Now this, a little bit of a different feel. A lot of the same things going on in a male voice now. It's not appropriate for a female. It's not appropriate for a male either. Same things happening in the voice, but the music, we have a lot of sounds that are very traditional. And it's kind of a big sound. This speaker is not going to even do justice to it. You almost have to put headphones on. And it just kind of overwhelms you in that sound. And it just wants to move. It's very moving music. But once again, there's some problems. By the way, my taste is choral music, and there's a bit of choral music coming in here, and I kind of like that a little bit, but the solo voice is still doing the same things we're talking about, right? You hear that? Can you hear it? Even if you don't agree with what I'm saying, can you hear it? Okay. All right. What if I just jump ahead in the song a little bit? We agreed that maybe that's not the healthiest, but let's just jump ahead here. You hear that? Okay, it's not a lot of big layering of rhythms, but we got some subtle polyrhythmic elements coming in there, and we have a solo voice that's doing what I'm talking about. You know, I listened to this piece a few times in preparing for this. And it's really attractive music. I can understand why anyone would struggle with this. Now, what if we keep it a cappella? Let's keep it a cappella.
I can only imagine what it will be like when I walk by your side. I can only imagine what my eyes will see.
See? What do you think? Does that have some of the things I'm talking about, the vocals I'm talking about, the slurring, scooping? All right. Let me just jump ahead in the song. Now, this is a cappella. Sorry. That was 100% vocal that you heard. And I realize that we've had people that have said, you got to stick with a cappella music. And I don't fault them. If your father gives you that direction, follow that direction. Don't push back against that. But please, don't find this. It breaks my heart to think that some of our young people find and listen to this kind of thing. I said in the beginning, I don't know what you all listen to. Okay? What about this? We wouldn't listen to BYU. No, we wouldn't do that. Oh, we got a choir. It's choral music. Okay. No solo. Just the choir singing a cappella. But do you hear some of those same vocal things happening? Yeah. It's amazing how well they could figure out how to do it together. Why all this variety anyway? Why would they even bother with that when obviously they're in a style where it gets a whole lot better than that, if you want to put it that way? I think it's because there's a market for all this stuff. The music industry is about money, okay? We didn't talk about that enough this week. And there's a market for this, so they're going to continue to make it. All right. Well, keeping it a cappella didn't work. Let's keep it Anabaptist. Keep it Amish Mennonite background. Is that going to work? Now, again, there's something that just cringes for me to do this. Because I believe there's some sincere people here, okay? And there's some families that sing together. And the last thing I want to do is discourage families singing. I think it's a wonderful thing. And some of these families singing, I don't want them to stop. That's a good thing. Even if they're singing the wrong kind of music, it's good for their family unit, okay? But oh, if we could just be more understanding of these things.
Truth is harder than a lie. The dark seems safer than the light.
Do we have some of that same scooping going on? I probably should have put together a whole list of mixing in some things that are appropriate and exercise discerning between them, but I didn't do that. I'm driving a point home today. Well, let's go back to more of the gospel sound. If we can't do contemporary, we can go back to more gospel sound. Do that. I'm on purpose not saying the names of these groups, okay? Because I'm not judging them as individuals. But I do want to help you discern music. How about this? This is a different style. What do we think? Is it good music? I see some timidly shaking their heads no. Do you hear the things we're talking about in that? And again, I'm not judging this gentleman. But honestly, if you listen to his music, why wouldn't you just listen to Alan Jackson? Why wouldn't you? And if you say, well, this somehow is better, okay, fine, but what are your children going to do? All right. I'm out of time. I'm going to quickly play two more. This one.
Oh, to be like,
and this is a family singing. I want to promote family singing.
This is my constant longing and prayer. Gladly I'll forfeit all of our treasures. Jesus, thy perfect likeness to wear.
Now, if you're thinking right now that I just thoroughly destroyed every music out there in existence, please come back tomorrow. I'll try to help you. All right? I'll try to help you. And if you feel like there's no way you could get yourself off of those sounds, maybe we can give you a few pointers for that tomorrow. Now, just to be fair, because I realize, by the way, did you hear the scooping in that one? It's a whole, I mean, it's nothing compared to what we started out with, I realize. But it's still there. And I think we need to be real about that. Well, I put a clip in. I did this last minute before I came. And the reason I did it was because I realized I just maybe stamped all over you. And I thought, well, to be fair, I'll put something in that I have to deal with. So, like I told you, I've developed a taste for choral music, But sometimes these choral groups, Mennonite choral groups even, are singing songs that, well, and this isn't a spiritual, it's a gospel song. And just listen to it and tell me what you think my problem is. Because this group, I know people that sing in this group. I like a good bit of their music. What was that? So lovely. Where did that come from? It was going so nice. I'll take a gospel song going like that, going up to that high note, so nice and clean, so beautiful, using her voice projected, not with a microphone right here, and all of a sudden, I'm like, okay, sorry. Thanks for listening to my frustration there, and hopefully that can help you a little bit not feel like I just thoroughly, and I'm sorry we don't have time to take questions. I'm already 5 minutes late. Thank you for your patience.